So we are going to talk about a new pitcher. Start a new month, start a new pitcher. And this pitcher that we're going to talk about, the story, I shouldn't call it a picture. It's a whole new story. A whole new aspect of practice, a whole new world that we practice in. And this story that we're going to talk about today is tied to last month's story. So it's tied to discipline and effort. I'm not quite sure how Tim talked about last month, but I think of that picture as our discipline and our effort to practice. And this picture that we're going to talk about, the story that we're going to talk about today, is tied to that. So just as you could say, taming the ox is about discipline and your effort at sticking with practice, riding the ox home is about the integration of the ox into your life. So let's put the picture up. And let's go through this a little bit first, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. So let's look at this picture. All right, so this, let's look at the picture first. So if you look at the picture, you can see that this ox, it's different than the picture before. Last year's picture, last month's picture, I don't know why I keep wanting to call it a picture, but last month's story had the practitioner, little tiny practitioner, in front of this massive ox with a rope around its neck, kind of pulling, you know, the ox along. But here we see that the practitioner is riding on the ox, foot up, in a kind of a casual way, kind of playing the flute here, really trying to hint that it's very relaxed. And you can see that the ox is actually looking up at the practitioner. Can we move that down so we can see last month? Just for a second. There we go. Okay. I want to just show you this because there's a contrast here that's happening with this month that relates to what happened before. So before, you can see the practitioner is looking behind. The practitioner is in front, and the practitioner, this little small yogi, is looking behind, keeping a watchful eye over the ox. And as long as the practitioner is basically watching and keeping the practice, you know, centered on the practice and focused on your practice. There's a level of diligence here. There's a level of effort that's happening here, with this ox. So now we can go back up to, this month's picture. All right. So for this month, the ox, this inner genuine self, is now watching the practitioner. The practitioner looks more balanced in relationship to the ox. It doesn't look like a tiny little being in relation to this massive ox. The practitioner is much more relaxed, more comfortable. These are all signs that there is becoming this embodiment. So up until this picture, the ox and the practitioner were separate, two completely different things. But this is the first picture, and the subsequent pictures from now on is going to increase the embodiment, the intersection, the integration of this yogi and the ox together. So this is the first picture where they're actually closer to one. They're not quite one yet, but they're closer to it. And what this, well, I'm just going to note some things in the picture first. You can see the path seems much stronger here. It's a more definitive path. So the grass is on the other side, and that looks much more definitive. And the path itself kind of stands out. So that definitiveness of the path, the yogi in connection to the boxer, it's much more of a one, an embodiment. The practitioner is very relaxed, sitting on the back. Some pictures actually show the yogi sitting on the back, looking in the opposite direction. So looking behind rather than looking forward the way the ox is moving. It's all pointing to this kind of relaxed way that we can become with practice when we're in this stage. There's a way in which this picture is also pointing to how comfortable this yogi has gotten with the whole ox itself. It's not challenging the ox at all. So the way the yogi is sitting, the comfort, the whole process is pointing to a much more blended kind of practice, which is what I want to talk about tonight, this kind of blended practice. But if we look at the words a little bit here, mounting the bull slowly, I return homeward. I don't think it's, let me just read the whole phrase. Mounting the bull slowly, I return homeward. The voice of my flute intones through the evening, measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony. I direct the endless rhythm. Whoever hears this melody will join me. So I don't think I don't think anything in these verses are random. I don't think there are any throwaway words. I think they're all interconnected. So if you remember from last month, the yogi is, 2 months earlier, the yogi was having a pretty much of a tussle trying to catch this bull, this fighting that was going on between the bull being our genuine self and the yogi being our kind of mental self, our egoic self, whoever we think we are. And so this 2 months ago, we were fighting with this bull, trying to subdue it and master it. And last month, we were talking about taming, which is more connected to this way in which our practice, we begin to stop fighting the mind, stop fighting, trying to make practice fit into our lives, and become more diligent in just practicing, just letting meditation be meditation. And gradually, over the course of this practice of just allowing practice to be practice, this bull begins to settle down. Our minds begin to settle down. There's less battle. And so we're now going to mount this ox, and in doing so, we do it slowly. There's a way in which, if you've ever gone on a retreat or you practice with a day of mindfulness or you practice with a non-residential, any kind of extended practice, what you notice is that the stiller you become, the more present you become, the more slowly and deliberate your actions become. And that slowness is it's almost connected and tied to the awe that comes with present moment. It's kind of strange, I think, because oftentimes we put the awe of practice, this kind of, pleasant, blissful specialness that happens when we practice, we put that as if it's somehow or another, some state of mind, some altruistic state of mind that we get to. But gradually you can begin to see that really that unique, special way about practice is really just present moment awareness. I can't stress that. It's really enough. It's just present moment awareness. So when we begin to get embodied with this practice, which is what this bull is this picture this month is representing, our first taste of embodiment of us and our genuine self. So us and this self that is capable of awakening. We slow down, not because we have to, but because there's a almost like it's an awe is what it is. It's like if you were going to come into the presence of God, if there was such a thing as God, you would not be running up in there. You would go slow. God probably doesn't care if you run up in there if you want to. What's God going to do? Like, slow down. Don't walk in church. I mean, think about it. We're all very tenderly and special when it comes to this sacred world. And I think it has something to do with the awe of present moment awareness. And so here we are slowly coming into this world of being in the present moment. After all we've gone through, here in picture six is the first time we've actually begun to come into the present moment and know we're in the present moment. I want to save this next line, I return homeward, and talk about that towards the end. But I want to note that this whole verse does not include that the rope and the whip are still being used. Not as definitively as it was when we were taming the ox in the first place. This rope and whip is still at hand, but it's not necessarily mentioned here. We don't even abandon it until next month. So here, we still are tied to discipline. And there's still a requirement of discipline, but we're in a much more relaxed, much more natural state. The voice of my flute intones through the evening, that is this reference to chanting and singing. There's a sense of joy that comes with the idea that you're chanting or you're singing. There's a sense of joy that's tied to what's happening here. This is the first time after all of the previous stories that this yogi is actually feeling relaxed and joyous. Present moment, relaxed in the awe of this whole interconnection with their true self. And there's a sense of joy that comes with that. I think this measuring with hand beats, the pulsating harmony, I think this is connected to Anapanasati, this mindfulness of breathing. And it's connected to, I was telling a group of people that the people that teach on Thursday night, I was telling them that in Anapanasati, I really love the way Venerable Analio helps point to Anapanasati. Because oftentimes when we think of breathing, mindfulness of breathing, the way it's taught, say, in mindfulness communities or the way it's taught in general, is you have to keep your attention on the breath. So keep your attention on the breath. Mindfulness of breathing is keep your attention on the breath. And there's this energy that gets kind of built in us where we think of mindfulness of breathing as this focused, striving, hardened effort to stay with the breath. But the way that Venerable Analio teaches it, it's so soft and beautiful. He teaches it as a backbeat. So it doesn't matter. You can be listening to me right now and you can feel this kind of backbeat of breathing going on. You never let it go. It's always there. It's just this constant sort of knowing that breathing is happening. And it does not affect your ability to pay attention to me, to pay attention to what's on the screen and look at the picture. It doesn't affect your ability to do anything. You can go talk. I can talk to you and I can still kind of feel this constant breathing that goes on in the back. It's that kind of backbeat is what I think this measuring the hand beats with the pulsating harmony. I think there's this way in which as we get more and more embodied, we begin to feel the breath as a constant backbeat of aliveness, a constant connection to the present moment, because in the present moment, the body's always breathing. The body, you are alive and the body's always breathing. If it's not doing anything else, it's always breathing. And so this reference of the hand beats, the pulsating is this connection between the joy of being in the present moment, the joy of this present moment awareness, this knowing of the backbeat that's always there. And I direct the endless rhythm. I think that is this idea that you are aware and keep your attention on this mindfulness of breathing. Keep your attention on the knowing that you're in the present moment. Whoever hears this melody will join with me. I think that is a reference to coming into relationship with Sangha. That you're returning homeward and there's a need to be in the present moment, to stay with this breathing, and then having a connection with others and Sangha and the voice of another to constantly keep this practice alive and keep the backbeat of it going. That's what I think we're doing here. And you can feel it in your own practice when you went from just practicing to really beginning to get a sense that I am connected to this. Somehow I am a part of this and I want to be in a Sangha. Some people, the first time they actually have that experience is they go on some retreat. And then at the end of the retreat, there's just this constant flurry of how do I stay with a group? I mean, I felt so connected because I was with this group in this retreat, and I've seen something, and how do I stay connected? So this picture is really pointing to coming home to your own body, coming home to a sense of interconnected to. It's a pointing to this, I return homeward, this pointing also to coming back into the world. And it's pointing to this feeling at home with other practitioners who are practicing also with this backbeat. There's a famous, I forgot to write his name down on the piece of paper. So I think it's mammon, but I'm going to, I'll bring it with me next week when I come. But this is the way he describes this picture. He says, when one attains kincho, I'm going to call that samadhi, a level of samadhi. So when one attains kincho, then on returning to the original world of impermanence, the world of impermanence becomes the world of reality. So in a way, when we start connecting to this inner peacefulness of the oneness of now, present moment, what we get connected to is impermanence. We get it back. Because when we're not in the world of nowness, we are connected to permanence and we are looking for everything to be permanent. But this coming into this embodied world, we are now connected to impermanence. So the world of impermanence becomes the world of reality. To be right in the very middle of ceaselessly churning daily life, just this is the pure land of serenity and nirvana. Hold that thought. One who refuses to return is not genuine. In the everyday world of common sense, the flowers are red and the willows are green. But in Zazen, which is in our practice, one destroys that world of common sense and enters the world where flowers are not red and willows are not green. But one must not stop at this point. Only when you have returned to the world where flowers are red and willows are green has one really attained truth. I just think this is so profound in a current time where people think that why would I want to do this practice in Buddhism and mindfulness? It is not going to have anything to do with the world. It's just all blissed out and happy times and the world is on fire. Stuff is going on. We should be out there fighting our way through. Why would we want to return to the world? I mean, why would I want to go practice in the blissful state? But I think what this story is pointing to is that the impulse when you come into present moment awareness is not to stay in bliss. The impulse, the true, the genuine place to be of serenity and nirvana is in the world of impermanence. That's the world we live in, samsara. That's where all the dukkha comes from. So there's a way in which our very essence is coming into this world. I'm sorry. We can actually take the picture down. I forgot. We had that up so we can see all the little peeps. So when we connect to this, when we connect to the world of impermanence, when we connect to this felt sense of our body, when we return to what the Buddha called the fathom-long body, we are not moving out of the world. We are actually moving into the world. And the more practice we get under our belts, the more we want to be a part of the world and make a difference. The more we want to respond to the suffering of the world, the more we want to be in it. What we bring is this secondary realization that flowers are not red and willows are not green, even though we live in a world where flowers are red and willows are not, and willows are green. or willows are not green. We know both of those as true. And in doing so, we remove the duality of it. This is what we're going to talk about all month. I know I might be getting out there a little bit. I can't help it. Sometimes I just get into these pictures and I just get so nerdy on them. Let me see if I can bring it into a much more realistic, down to earth kind of way of talking about it. For lay practitioners, nothing about practice, nothing about stillness, nothing about meditation, these blissful states we can get into, peaceful states we can get into, nothing about it makes us want to give up our lives, right? Anybody want to, just because you started meditating, decide, I'm going to get a divorce. I just can't live with them anymore. I'm going to get a divorce. Not because you got some problems. You might want to get a divorce because you know the problem's going on, but not that. I'm saying the practice itself does not make you want to have a divorce, does not make me want to walk away from my kids, does not make all of a sudden I want to give up my house or give up my car. The practice itself does not make you want to completely chuck your life. On the contrary, what the practice does is make you want to live better in your life, live closer to your life. The practice has a way of wanting, helping you want to be more connected with your partner in a more loving, kinder, connected way. I want to be more engaged with life, not less engaged. So this practice that we're doing is not to take us out of life. It actually creates a greater degree of wanting to be engaged in life. But to be engaged in life, the truth is we are going to be engaged in samsara, and in samsara is suffering. So we are going to be engaged in a life that's part and parcel connected to suffering. The challenge with this picture, you know, I think all these stories have both a gift. That's the gift of it. The challenge of the picture itself is this dichotomy that is what I was pointing to, that people think that the world of Dhamma is separate from the real world. This altruistic kind of need to go live in a cave kind of thought about practice is the biggest problem, I think, with this picture. Because oftentimes, as a teacher, besides the question, how do I find a sangha? How do I find a group of people? The end of a retreat, the second most asked question is, well, but this has slowed me down so much and I feel so peaceful. I'm going to lose my edge when I go back to work. I don't want to be in this kind of altruistic state because I'm going to lose my edge. I'm going to lose my energy. I'm not going to be able to take care of my bills. I'm not even going to want to work anymore. I mean, my whole life is going to go to crap if I stay on this path, because it feels as though you have to choose between an altruistic kind of what is called a high mind life, not high mind meaning better, but high mind meaning spacious, versus a lower mind of getting things done, taking care of the day-to-day you know, managing your life kind of energy. Going to work, coming home, dealing with traffic. So somehow or another, over the course of the next few months, we are going to learn how to take the balance of discipline and effort that comes with practice and integration and blend the two of these together. In this month, though, it still feels as though you have to make a choice between the gift or the peacefulness of Dhamma and my ordinary life. And you're not quite sure that you could hold them both. That we're going to learn over the course of the next few months, that that is not true. You can hold them both. But really, what we're at in this month is about integration. And this is the first beginning stages of that integration. Let me see if there's something else I want to talk about. Oh, yes. So remember the yogi was sitting on the back of this bull. And part of the reason why I think this integration has its challenge is because it's like the sitting on the back of a bull or an ox, playing the flute, singing chantings. That is so opposite of the way the world talks about liberation. The way that the world talks about being free is working hard, getting a good job, saving up your money, having some security, some stability. And that image of the ox represents more like someone that's lazy, not really doing anything, which is part of why I think people tend to think that the more you practice, the less you're going to be engaged in the world. But actually, that is not the more kind of interconnected we get with the peacefulness of the present moment, the more we are going to learn that life is pretty much opened up to us. So this picture is pointing to this counterintuitive way of being in the world, of actually being in the world with a level of joy and happiness, with a level of ease and relaxation, and a kind of interconnected embodied presence. That is so counterintuitive to the way we live. We live out of the head. We don't want anything to do with the body. There's nothing to be happy about. So just let's just buck up and deal with it. And there's this constant pressure to strive to accomplish and get things done. What I think this picture and what I'm hoping that we can talk about over the course of the month is this picture represents that you do not have to choose one or the other. That you actually can learn to live both carrying our practice and the altruistic kind of state of peace and happiness that comes with being in the present moment, and take care of business. Go to work. You know, like me, you could be a trial lawyer and still fight to win. You know, you can still ask for someone to get jail time, a lot of jail time if need be. You can still do your life the way your life is unfolding and maintain a degree of peacefulness, maintain a degree of interconnectedness, maintain the backbeat of breathing, of knowing where you are and knowing what you're doing, knowing the state of the mind, knowing the state of the body. And this is just the first step into it. So let's just take a moment. We're going to Just sit a moment here. A poem by Ellen Bass. If you knew, what if you knew you'd be the last to touch someone? If you were taking tickets, for example, at the theater, tearing them, giving back to the ragged stubs, you might take care to touch that palm, brush your fingertips along the lifeline's creases. When a man pulls his willed suitcase too slowly through the airport, when the car in front of me doesn't signal, when the clerk at the pharmacy won't say thank you, I don't remember they're going to die. A friend told me she'd been with her aunt. They just had lunch, and the waiter, a young gay man with plum black eyes, joked as he served the coffee, kissed her aunt's powdered cheek when he left. And then they walked half a block and her aunt dropped dead on the sidewalk. How close does the dragon's spoon have to come? How wide does the crack in heaven have to split? What would people look like if we could see them as they are, soaked in honey, strung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time? Okay. I'm hoping we can have some questions here. Got to give you a caveat. We are getting into some stories that are seemingly out of your reach. Some of you are going to say, yeah, I'm not there. That's not me. That's not my practice. I ain't got there yet. And I want to urge you to reconsider that thought, to reconsider it, and to think beyond the limitations of believing you have to be permanently there, permanently there. There's this idea that if I have gotten embodied, I am embodied forever, permanent. And that kind of thinking will cause these stories to gradually get disconnected, because you'll think to yourself, I'll never get there. I mean, we're going to get to a point where the ox and the yogi both disappear. You're like, I'm never going to get there. That's enlightenment. I'm not getting there. That's too far for me. But I want to encourage you to begin to see these stories as these moments in time that we have access to as practitioners. And so if there's anything about what I said that seems over your head, I don't understand what Tori was saying. What does that mean? That doesn't make any sense. Then you should be raising your hand and asking a question. Because there's a way in which that right there, that moment of, I don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. That's the moment that we should be talking about. So we can open up to the possibility that all of these stories are actually connected to you. You actually have already experienced this as a moment in time. It's not so far away from you that you can't grasp it. It may not be the way you live constantly, but you've had a moment when you had this sense of embodied interconnectedness and you were in the present moment of some unfolding and watching it unfold and totally okay. Even if you didn't like it, that's what this picture is pointing to. That's what I want us to see if we can talk about. We're going to talk about it all month, but I just want to first get a kind of a test to see if anyone is has any questions about anything that I said that may have been confusing, or you don't understand, or you're not sure, or just, you know, I don't think I've ever experienced that, Tori. We can talk about that. So let's just see if there's any, take a moment, think about it. Let's see if there's any questions or comments. You don't even have to have a question. Yeah, Iris. Oh, okay, Jean, just a second.
Thank you. Thank you, Tori.
Yep.
So I'm put in mind of some of the times that Rodney would talk about, it's right here. And then the idea of, that we think relative and ultimate reality are sort of two different things. And so I gather, that you've been talking about the moments of integration of those, two truths that we already do experience, in our lives. And for myself, when I am mindful, really mindful, and embodied in those brief moments, either while I'm sitting or during the day or whatever, I can feel that aliveness, that awakening in my body and mind. And it's a marvelous feeling. And, and a lot of the time, I'm not there. I'm lost in thought. And, if enlightenment is being integrated all the time, great. I have yet to, I really appreciate those moments of being present and being mindful and being curious and feeling that kind of connection. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we're not at the end, right? So we're in a stage of practice, and it's important, I think, for all of us to feel and begin to investigate all of these stages as part of your ordinary everyday life, that they're not random things that happen to other people. And the more you see these stages as part of your ordinary practice, the more you feel, like you're saying, Iris, it's great when that happens. And yeah, there's, okay, hopefully one day it'll happen more, but I don't care. I'm just happy when it happens, because that's what keeps me tied to the practice. That's what keeps me in it. And, the Buddha didn't make any bones about how difficult this was. He said, it's hard to see. And he said what he had attained took, great effort to attain it. So yeah, it's hard to do, hard to see, hard to attain. But everyone here has had these moments when they've had this experience of I like the way you put it, the relative and the absolute coming together in one moment in time. Deborah?
Hi. My question or my this the connection between the practice getting to being in the present, which feels very individual, even if we're here in the room, we're all in our own selves. How does that really lead to being in community? Even in the picture, he's all by himself with his ox. And so, well, if anybody who hears will join, but there's nobody else there. It feels like there's a contradiction here. There's a very individual practice getting into the present moment, which we can only do by ourselves. How does that really, and still that belief that this will lead us into group. I mean, you know, I come here because I want to be with other people. I feel like my meditation is better somehow, more less distracted when I'm with other people, but still when I sit, I'm all by myself.
So that is a great question, because that is exactly the understanding this picture, I think, this story is pointing to. What this story is pointing to is prior to this month, there was a sense of separation. And this month is trying to point out that there is no separation. So the best way I think I could maybe begin to open up this idea is imagine you were here sitting and I wasn't here. Nobody else was in here. Nobody was on the Zoom. We didn't have some 30 people. It was just you sitting here in the chair. Don't you think that would feel a lot different? Yeah, feel a lot different. And the reason why it would feel a lot different is because when you're truly alone, you're truly alone. But what this picture is pointing to is integration is that this moment, when you're present to this moment, you are present to the moment with everything as it is, which means that you're present to the awareness of not being alone. You're not sitting here focused just on you. You're sitting here in the presence with everybody else. It's what the Buddha called dependent origination. So it all arises together. We're all here together. And this moment is this moment because we're all here together. When we are attentive to everything that's going on in the present moment, the fullness of the whole moment becomes real. When we are singularly focused on what I want, then we are stuck in samsara. We're stuck in the suffering that's going on. So I guess I want to say it like this, just to help it make a little bit more sense. Going through everything that's happening in the world right now, the way it's happening, in a sangha with practitioners, I feel a lot more capacity than I would if I were trying to go through this same period of time all by myself. Can you see the difference? If I'm all by myself, truly all by myself, then I'm left to my own mind's stories, opinions, thoughts, fears, worries, all of that begins to spin and spin and spin. But if I am in the present moment with other people, I have way more courage to be with whatever is happening. So there's a way in which this is what I think Iris was pointing to. The altruistic is this more like we are in it together energy. This relative is you're sitting here by yourself. You're sitting here in a room with a whole bunch of other people. But the truth is, you're not by yourself. The truth is, you're in the room with a whole bunch of other people. That's what this is really. It's learning to see that. It's learning to see and integrate the truth that every single moment of our ordinary lives is coming together because of all the conditions that are coming together in one moment. And we're learning to be with this constant, changing, ever-moving, impermanent nature of it. Let me see if that... Does that answer your question? You think so? It's hard what I'm trying to say, because the only way, this is what I want us to practice with. I want us to begin to practice with this knowing. When you know, when you're in the present moment and you know where you know we're all here together, there is not a sense of aloneness and I'm in it all by myself. The only time we feel that sense of aloneness, I'm by myself, is when we're not present to the totality of all that's around us. We're only trapped in our own thinking. And that is where the yogi was before. So your practice is to help you feel into the fullness of the moment. I'll say it a different way. You guys, probably lots of you know my story. I hate doing the bathrooms on retreat. And whenever I had to do, whenever I'd go on retreat, first retreat I ever went on, I got assigned the women's bathroom and I was pissed. So it wasn't the first retreat. It was the second retreat I was on, but it was the first retreat where everybody there was white except for me. And I was pissed because I thought, oh, I'm the slave girl. I'm the maid. I'm cleaning up the bathrooms. And I spent the whole time cussing and fussing and complaining. But about 3 days into this retreat, I started getting some samadhi. I started getting still, not quite so in my mind, just like, just me, 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 me. I started getting stiller, more peaceful. And as I started getting stiller, more peaceful, my mind wasn't quieter. It was as loud. Every time I'd go into the bathroom, I would hear this mind yelling and fussing and complaining. And they gave me this job on purpose. This is what they probably give all the black people. This is what they give them, this yogi job. And I don't know why I did this, but out of the blue, one day when I was doing this job, I asked, what do the eyes see? Well, the first one was smell, because that was the most pronounced. What do they eat? What does the nose smell? And I realized I was smelling Windex. And I love the way Windex smells. And it smells so clean. And then what made this even so better is on a retreat, you know, there's like this, everybody's no perfume, no scents. So here I was in this bathroom smelling Windex that I actually liked. I was looking at the bathroom and it was so clean. I cleaned it. I was cleaning it all day. I wasn't even in a bathroom that was dirty that I had to clean. I'm in a bathroom that's already clean that I'm just adding to it, tidying up. So the bathroom is actually clean. It smells great in there. I had this sense that I was all by myself, right? I'm not worried about anyone looking at me. I'm just in this bathroom. I even have a little sign outside that says, don't come in. I'm cleaning the bathroom. Stay out. I had this humongous smile on my face because it was the first time I realized I actually was quite happy. This is the best yogi job ever. That realization that the mind is what you're talking about, Deborah. When it's just the mind, it's just me, it spins in its judgments and concepts, and it just spins and spins and spins in opinionated assumptions, expectations, wants, don't wants. That's what we get trapped in. But present moment awareness is not just the mind. It is all of the sense doors, full existence into this moment. And the full existence into this moment, you know you're not alone because you can see all the people here. You can hear everything. There's a sense of interconnected. I can feel the energy of everyone. There's a felt sense of beyond me. But if we just listen to our own thinking and get caught in that, we can stay stuck in a sense that I'm all by myself. I'll never get through this. But when you open up to all of the sense doors and you realize the fullness of this present moment, now you can see I'm not alone. I'm connected to many, many people, and I'm not, and that is the true present moment, not me sitting here lost in thought. Do you see what I'm pointing to? This month's picture is about learning how to practice with that understanding. How do I bring that understanding into this present moment so I don't feel so isolated and so alone, and I feel more interconnected with everything? Jean.
I realize that what I want to do is share something that typically comes at the end of the month, but I'm just bursting at the seams here. So
okay,
I'm going to share with you a haiku. Once and then again a second time with a slightly different take.
Okay.
We travel as one, my true nature and my heart. Join me, won't you please? And again, we travel as one, my true nature and my heart. Join this melody. And it's an ode, if you will, to the Sangha.
That's so nice, Jean.
We travel at the speed of light when we travel together. I'll be there with you. So, thank you.
Thank you. That's very nice. That's exactly what we're pointing to. There's a way that we are, there's an African proverb you may have heard that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And so there's a sense that we are slowing down, coming together, moving through this world together. It is challenging times, but there's something honorable about this. I must be the only one that feels this because I'm such a history fanatic, but there's an honor to being able to move through the world in times like this. If we move through the world during the Renaissance when everything's gravy, what good is that? I mean, you just sort of go through. But if you move through the world through difficult times, there's an honor in that. There's some kind of badge that you're earning at the end that says, I lived through the 2020s. Thank you so much, Jean. That just really lifted my heart. Did you write that yourself?
Indeed, I did.
I knew it. Very nice. That's perfect for the picture. Now you're going to have to write another one for the end of the month. You can't be using the same old one we already heard. You're going to have to work on it.
I promise.
Okay, good. Well, I hope I've encouraged you to, I hope these three things that you've heard between Jean and Iris and Deborah, that you have a sense of where we're going this month, going towards integration. So next month, next week, we'll talk a little bit more into this idea of integration and how we can make that happen or how we can see it more fully. And we'll gradually unfold this over the course of the 4 months. So we'll have a little bit of probably a little breakout rooms, depending on how many people come next week, and some practice questions, discussion a little bit here. But I'm going to add in a little bit more each week so that we can gradually add in a little bit. The very last Monday, I will be teaching a retreat at Cloud Mountain, and Tim will be here. But over the course of the next 3 weeks, we're going to add a little bit, add a little bit, add a little bit to get this integration, to begin to see how to integrate practice. All right? Okay. So I'll see everybody next week, and it's good to see you again. Bye-bye.